hello, friends, and welcome back to the Imago Nutrition Podcast. My name is Mark Glesny. I am one of your co-hosts, and I am here with my sister-in-law, business partner, and registered dietitian extraordinaire, Danielle Glesny. And speaking of some of your credentials, Danielle, I think we have an interesting topic today. This is a question that comes up from time to time, though I think you and I can both agree, we actually wish people were asking this question a lot more. Right. So it's actually not a question that's asked a ton. I think because there's confusion or there's people that maybe think some things are the exact same thing and they're not. And you and I even have different professional stature on this question that we're going to talk about. And so we're going to be okay moving into this discussion, knowing that there's a delineation even between our backgrounds and our experience. And then we're going to talk a little bit about how we combine that, though, why we've combined that. And to kind of help people think about this, because ultimately, at the end of the day, there's a lot of piss poor information out there. Can I just use that term for the first time on this podcast? Like, it's tremendous how fast terrible advice gets slung around the internet and social media. Look, I'm a social media fan. Part of my full-time career is being on top of social media. I have been doing this for over 20 years. Since MySpace started, I've been in the social media space. I'm on virtually every platform personally and professionally. I love social media. It's a part of my work. But there are pros and cons to everything, okay? So just as you can use those channels to find good information, you can find it. You can use those to find a lot of bad. So as I usually state, this is the, you know, the podcast where we answer your questions, give you practical nutrition strategies to help you and your family flourish. And so the topic or the question at hand today is, what's the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist? Now, some people are perhaps listening to this. They saw the title and they tapped on it because they're really curious. Some people are like, I didn't even know there was a difference. And so you may be coming at this from it, or you may even think like, why does this even matter? And so whether you're someone that has thought about this, has never thought about this, or you're just wondering why on earth we're spending an episode talking about it, I hope this is valuable and helps you process better the information that you receive, whether it's from us, whether it's from someone else. All right. Someone with letters after their name or someone with no letters after their name, with a really big social media following, with a small social media following. We hope to equip you with this with a little bit. We're not going to do a massive like dissertation on this topic, but we're going to go through this question of what's the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist. And again, hopefully to connect the dots for you so that you can make better choices about the information, the guidance, the advice that you receive and what that ultimately means for you, for your health, for your family, and for your long-term flourishing. So with that, Danielle, I want to kind of toss it over to you because, as I said, you are a registered dietitian, and technically your credentials is an RDN, a registered dietitian nutritionist. So I think that's where perhaps a little confusion comes in, because those two words are used independently, but they can also be used together. And so you are a registered dietitian nutritionist. I consequently, we can talk about this a little bit more. I've never called myself a nutritionist. I've called myself a nutrition coach. I think I'm an evidence-based nutrition coach. I'm an evidence-based nutrition practitioner, if you will. But there's a reason I don't use the term nutritionist. And that's much to do with one, what we're going to talk about in terms of credentialing, but two, there's just too much confusion and I don't think it says anything anymore. So all that's to say, I want to toss it over to you, welcome you to the episode finally, since I'll be quiet now a couple minutes in and help us think through again, the starting point of what's the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist.
So a dietitian, to put it simply, goes to school for nutrition education, goes through an internship process and takes an exam. A nutritionist is someone who is enthusiastic about nutrition.
It's anyone, right? Anyone
not necessarily a specific, right? Yeah, not a specific definition. It really could be anyone. They could come from any background and just not, you know, not a specific qualifications to get the term nutritionist. So I briefly just looked up like Missouri State, bachelor degree to become a dietitian. And so they had like a couple things that I just want to list out here. So in the bachelor's degree, of course, there's some general education requirements. There's dietetic and nutrition courses. There's biomedical science courses, public affairs, capstone experience. I don't even remember that one. And then other related requirements would be something like elements of microbiology, genetics, organic chemistry. I do remember that one. It's quite awful. Mm. Biochem, probability and statistics, and others. But since we're on the topic, I really love some of my dietetic and nutritionist nutrition courses. And I just wanted to list off a few of those. One was food science. In this class, I got to make things and take out an ingredient and see how it came about or how it was after you cooked without that ingredient. So that was really cool because that really helped a lot practically with cooking. Food and culture was a class. Nutrition throughout the lifespan. Introduction of nutrition assessment in sports nutrition. Nutritional assessment, food safety, nutrition education and communications, etc. So those were some of my favorite classes. So I do really love my education experience. Go ahead.
I was just going to say real quick. So talk to, because some people might be new to the podcast. So you referenced Missouri, which is where you currently reside, right? And then talk about where you went to school.
Yes, that was Missouri State. Yes, I went to the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities. So I did my undergraduate
Gophers. Degree there. Let's go, baby. It's where you met my brother and your whole life changed, obviously, for the better. You got work into our family. You've been thanking Jesus ever since. So yes. Good old University of Minnesota. Okay. Mm-hmm. I just want to be clear on that as to why you kind of referenced Missouri, but your background is actually up in Minnesota.
Yeah. I don't know how I survived the cold, but...
Kind of interesting. Well, that's because you were on a D1 scholarship, right? You were swimming with the U of M.
So. Oh, I was swimming and freezing my hair off because you're like biking with wet hair. I'm glad you went with hair because
most people say they freeze something else off. Well done. Way to keep it PG. Thank you. Even though I said piss poor at the beginning of this.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was. My parents were shocked because I was always the one that was cold, never wanted to be winter at all, but
and then you're trying to run across campus after being in the pool and literally getting icicles in your hair. So that's where I went to high school. I didn't go to college in Minnesota, but I know the barren winter, the deep cold. I visited friends on campuses, not only just U of M Twin Cities, but all the way up in like Duluth, and it is whipping cold. So I kind of
the
like
ways they call you Gopher is they have so many tunnels where you can avoid going outside, but
yeah, people don't realize that the university system, like in Minnesota and those places, like if you're not from the north, like they have tunnel systems that connect major buildings. I remember doing that when I went up to visit friends in Duluth, which is way north Minnesota, if you don't know. Even colder up there, it even has lake effect. And yeah, we basically were able to go anywhere on campus we wanted to underground. So that's part of the fun fact as to why some of the whole golden gopher thing came about. So, and so again, just to be clear, so let's be clear on this. A dietitian has studied and is registered and has taken the exam and is a registered dietitian nutritionist. Mm-hmm. In their title, right? So RDN. Now you see this shortened to RD a lot, right? You see
well,
a lot
actually,
of
no, it was, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Clarify it started as RD. So my first, probably majority of my career, probably the last 3 years or so is when they switched to adding nutritionist on the end of our credentials to help the public recognize what we're doing. So
interesting. Because I've just remembered seeing kind of both. And so I didn't know if there was a clear cutoff or some people just chose that or whatnot. So that makes a lot of sense because dietitian, I guess that's not clear enough for folks. But now there's also confusion about RDN too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the dietitian, I guess that term was not recognized well with the public. And so they gave us the option to add nutritionist to our credentials or not.
Interesting. And so again, that's kind of the process. Like people understand that this is like graduate level work, if you will, like in nutrition, right? If you're listening to this podcast, I'll tell you this. So let me state it clearly. If you're listening to this podcast, it doesn't matter what you do or what you've done, what you have studied or what you believe, you right now could call yourself a nutritionist and there would be no legal ramification for doing so. You could go put it on your Instagram bio. You could put it in your email signature. You could do whatever you want. Just call yourself a nutritionist because you really love nutrition. So the irony is I really do love nutrition, study it, have been working in it for 15 years. I've never called myself a nutritionist. Why? Because it's nebulous. It doesn't mean anything. So what I tell people is that when they say, well, what do you do? Or if they, you know, challenge like the advice I'm giving, I say, look, I'm an evidence-based nutrition coach. And on top of that, if you want formal education, I went through the nutrition science certification course at Stanford Medicine as a part of Stanford Center for Health Education. So it was an 8-week program. I'll tell you, just give you all the guts of it. Okay. This was not a weekend certification. Okay. It wasn't a 2-week. So it was an 8-week certification. So it was a 2-month certification, really 9 with kind of onboarding. Studied under Professor Gardner, who is still, as of today, still at Stanford, in the nutrition department. And every week had to read, had to do lectures, had to watch lectures, had to take a quiz, had to take a test and write a paper every week for 8 weeks on various topics. I can't remember them all. If I tried to list off all 8, I'd probably get it wrong. But it started with something like nutrition and politics, which is really just understanding how the dietary guidelines for Americans are constructed. So it's the quote unquote politics of how do those kind of government level, USDA level recommendations get created with outside panels, third party experts, et cetera. Then we went into things like macronutrients. So carbohydrates 1 week, fats 1 week, protein the next week. We went into micronutrients, went through those in various weeks. We did things like there was a supplemental pediatric course, part of the course that I took, et cetera, et cetera. So all that's to say it was a 2-month certification program through Stanford Medicine, or more refined, the Center for Health Education, which is a part of Stanford Medicine. And so if people are looking for sort of, well, what's your formal education? And that is my response. It's not, I'm a nutritionist, do what I say. It's, okay, I did my nutrition science certification program through Stanford Medicine, and I'm an evidence-based practitioner, which means I am going to draw my conclusions and recommendations from literature, scientific literature, which we could talk about a little bit here. And so that is what I am. Some people might think I'm kind of reorienting them toward the research to deflect off, you know, not being a dietitian. And I tell them that's exactly what I'm doing. I don't want you to take this advice because Mark said so, or even because I've been doing this for 15 years, or look at all my client testimonies, or ask her, it worked for her. I've done this myself. It worked for me. It's that the recommendations are being drawn, the conclusions are being drawn from the best evidence, which we can talk about in a little bit. So, and Danielle, do you want to kind of talk a little bit about why on earth then would a registered dietitian pair up, apart from being, you know, now brother and sister-in-law? we don't do this because you love hanging out with me by any means. It's just because, you know, we're on the same mission. But we want to talk a little bit about like how that worked for you as an RDN coming in, and like having your crazy brother-in-law be like, hey, we should start a business together.
Sure, sure. I did want to say, though, I only got to the bachelor's degree, and then we did a year internship, which was really cool because you got to experience what it was like to work with under a dietitian in multiple different areas. So, you know, in food science or in the hospital and outpatient, all the different possibilities. So, and then you took the exam. So that was the process, the bachelor's degree, verification letter to apply to an accredited dietitian internship program, which is about a year, and then the registration exam. So anyway, I would say, yes, it was really fun. I think I just told you no once, Mark. I think you asked me once and then I said no. And yeah, then you asked me again.
That's true. I think like before I technically started Imago, because I ended up starting Imago, I launched Imago Nutrition on my 40th birthday. So that's how I remember the date. Call me cliche, March 28th. That would have been 2021 then, because I'm 42 now, right? So March 28th, I launched it. And I think I had asked you prior if we should like start working on that. Then I kind of launched the business. Maybe you just needed to see a little bit more of a professional storefront. So I launched that. It was just me, my nutrition coaching business, which I, you know, have been doing on the side, if you will, or kind of underneath the table, or kind of in secret for 15 years, or at that time, maybe like 13 years. since 2008, whatever the math is. But then by that summer, so it was like March of 21, by that summer, somehow, probably just with my charm, my wit, my sense of humor. And so I convinced you to think about coming on board and even jump in on like a consultation with myself and a client, right? Because you had to kind of feel it out because you were being a good RDN, which is like, look, anyone can just start giving nutrition advice. But does this guy even know what he's talking about, let alone, you know, have the right to, you know, help people. So yeah, talk us through that. Cause you're right. I think I'd asked you, you weren't in a place really where I think you thought, you know, again, with bandwidth, with kids, with your full-time career as an outpatient dietitian, right? Working with a hospital system, it just didn't make sense the first time I breached the subject, but by, I think summerish of 2021, I finally convinced you and it's been all downhill since then. Right. So.
I do remember that client that I got to sit in with you on. And I would just say, Mark, you're probably the most motivating person I know. I mean, seriously, I listened to that information you were giving that client and I was really just checking your facts, honestly. Mm-hmm. And then I was just thrown off, not thrown off in a good way. It was like, oh my gosh, I need to drink more water. And then sure enough, I drank so much water the next week. So you are the most motivating person I know, which I think is very important to be that way.
And let's say too, that can be, let's dive into that again. And by the way, if you're listening to this, you might already know right now, like we're not approaching this episode like we normally do. We don't have like bulleted lists. I literally have no notes right now. This is just kind of a discussion between the two of us. We're going to kind of do some more of this. We're allowing ourselves to be a little more free with a podcast that we own, right? So we're going to have some fun topics where we just get together and discuss. So I want to lean in on this unplanned because that's a catch 22 being, I do believe, you know, communication is a huge component of misinformation, right? I think people that are really articulate and really motivating, can a lot of times have some really terrible, terrible advice, but people believe it because they're swept up in the communication of it. And I, as a communicator, both as a public speaker, I was a pastor that was in the pulpit for 6 years. I do a fair amount of speaking in my full-time career. I love speaking. I was a fitness instructor. I always gave them a nutrition speech at the end of every fitness class, right? Like I love talking. I love communicating. People can tell I'm kind of a spaz. I'm an extrovert. I love talking, love talking. And my core clients that sign up for like a 90-minute initial consultation and it takes 2.5 hours. They're like, but I want to be honest about that because that's something to be wary of. It's one thing to be passionate and articulate. That's awesome. But it's not enough to just be passionate and articulate. You have to have the backing. I would say, and I think we would say as evidence-based folks, because I could say all the same, I could say anything I want the same sort of way. Does that make sense? But you still got to also make sure that what is being articulated, and what I try to do is I try to make the recommendations from these crazy studies that we read through, right? It's like, oh, who wants to go read a meta-analysis of 18 control trials, right? And dig through all this sort of stuff. What I'm going to do is I'm going to present the summation. I'm going to present the conclusion and the practical application. What does that mean for you? Right. And so we did that on our last podcast episode. We got into nitrogen balance. Right. And so that's like super nerdy, but hopefully it was somewhat like informative for people. Cause what we did is whether you read the study or not, we gave you the nuggets, we gave you the outcome, which is, you know, X, Y, and Z. So all that's to say, you know, I appreciate that. I love being a communicator. I do believe that's one of my God-given strengths that I've been able to execute on for years in various modalities and capacities in my life and in my career. But also at the same time, don't just take someone that speaks really well or has a really great TikTok account to mean authority necessarily. Ask where the guidance is coming from. If it's coming from their experience or their other clients or what they believe or what they've done themselves, that's not enough to establish a solid recommendation for someone else. So, yeah. So again, I appreciate that. I didn't mean to like sideswipe like a compliment about communication, but I wanted to take the time to acknowledge that, remember that, you know, well communicated ideas can still be really terrible ideas. So,
yeah, no, that's another reason is I was good with working with you is you're constantly reading those meta-analyses that no one else wants to read and just basically being the messenger, delivering the message that, you know, in a clear, concise way where we're not having to spend hours reading 36 pages. So another thing I really like,
some of it can be pretty dense. Let's be honest. So.
Yeah. Another thing I really like is you practice handing things off. You know, if you're not comfortable with a topic, you don't feel like you can, you know, where the evidence lies, then you give that to someone else. You refer out. I think that's always really important when you are meeting with someone, whether it's us or someone else. If they think they're a know-it-all, they know all topics, then that's a huge red flag. No one can be an expert in everything. So I feel like you're the expert in things that you love and you spend extra time in researching and knowing how the research changes and things like that. So,
Awesome.
Anything else we should talk about?
If you don't mind, I had one thing on my phone because we're kind of leaving it there, sort of like the research, but let's talk about that real fast because I have something that we've talked about a little bit, which is what I would call the hierarchy of scientific evidence to establish good practice. Because here's also an irony. As much as I love research and look to it, we don't cling to it like dogma, right? Because research can change or we can have different conclusions over the years. So that's holding research with an open hand that because I read the study in 2012, that it can't be the takeaways of the conclusions can't be challenged and overridden by better research in 2022, right? Mm-hmm. So a study can come out 10 years later that, controls something a little better, had a different pool of participants that was a little bit better, whatever, because there's so much involved in research and we don't have to get into everything. Just keep in mind that part of being evidence-based, it's actually a relief to be evidence-based because what we can say is as of today, I'll make the argument that the most conclusive recommendation would be X, Y, and Z based off these studies. And in 5 years, someone comes and says, look at this new study. It totally disproves what you were saying. You shouldn't be having 34 grams of fiber. You should be having 38. You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to look at the research, validate it, take a look at its, integrity and be like, cool, I guess I'm recommending 38 moving forward. Sweet. It doesn't hurt me, right? Because I'm not relying on my experience or my dogma, right? Or what I've done for my clients. It science helps us in that sense evolve, even with recommendations. So someone, by the way, that's not willing to change their opinion, another massive red flag. Okay. Someone that is not willing to say, I used to believe and now I do not. I've done this considerably because I really got started in the fitness space and group fitness for a university. And I was going down the road of believing things like you need to eat every 2 to 3 hours to keep your metabolism cranking. You won't burn as much fat if you don't eat every 2 hours, And the science underneath that is that, of course, your metabolism goes up every time you eat. It has to digest the food. That doesn't mean that there's a different outcome than if the calories are accounted for. If you eat 2,000 calories, you burn 2,000 calories, you're in an neutral energy balance, okay? And it doesn't mean that if you eat 2,000 and burn 2,000, but you ate every 2 hours, suddenly you're going to burn more than that. That's not how it works. So I could go through some different topics where I've changed my mind over the years. And any evidence-based person that's truly evidence-based as opposed to dogma-based is going to do that. But with that said, I just wanted to kind of read off a quick list. And even on this, so even for this, I'm going to give you a citation. You can go read what I'm about to read yourself. So if you look up and just Google PMID, so the letter PMID, and then the number 295-40367, okay? PMID 295-40367. You're going to get into the literature about what I'm about to discuss, which is establishing a hierarchy of scientific evidence used to establish good practice. Okay. So I love this. We've done a graphic of this on our social media. Maybe I'll post it again coming out of this episode. It's basically a pyramid. So in your mind, I want you to think of a pyramid. Okay. And unlike other pyramids where the bottom shows like the greatest foundation, right? So like if you were to take a look at like what's the Mediterranean diet, you'll notice that the bottom of that pyramid is like fruits and veggies, right? Because that's what you want predominantly in your nutrition. This is not that type of hierarchical picture in this pyramid. This is basically just rungs of a ladder, if you will, from bottom to top, the best scientific evidence, okay? So even know that even in research, not all research is equally strong, if you will. It's not all equally strong. We need all of these types of research, okay, in the conversation, but please don't believe that all research is the same. Okay. And so here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to kind of read from the bottom up these different rungs of, again, hierarchy of scientific evidence used to establish good practice. This begins at the bottom. This is the lowest form of scientific evidence. It includes generally four things. Ideas. Okay. So you just have an idea, right? Expert opinion. I love that one. Editorials and anecdote. Okay. So I love this because even if someone considers me an expert in something, let's say energy balance or whatever it is, or weight loss or fat loss or whatever it is, I articulate that I as an expert, quote unquote, I don't even use that term in regards to myself, but if you do consider me an expert, I want to remind you that I am the lowest form of scientific evidence established to establish good practice. Now, does that mean I'm worthless? No. What it means is that I'm going to be referring you to much higher evidence than just my opinion. Okay. Therefore, it's no longer my opinion. It is established in the research. Then we start to move our way up. So just know that the lowest form of scientific evidence used to establish good practice in this context in nutritional science is ideas, expert opinions, editorials, and anecdotes. Above that is what's known as case reports and case studies. We're not going to get into all of these because we would just be talking for hours, or I'd be talking for hours and Daniel would be putting up with me for hours. But so we'll just talk about case reports and case studies are next up. Okay. Above those are cross-sectional studies. Again, all of these have purpose. Some of these, you have to do these because you can't study certain things for 10 years, right? You can't get enough people to eat only the food you provide them for 15 years. So these layers are not to diminish the importance. It's just to say that you have to remember the context of the research, okay? So we're not saying like this one is good and this one is bad. There's too many variables at play in research, okay? So again, at the bottom is those ideas, expert opinions, editorials, and anecdote. Then above that is case reports and case studies. Above that are the cross-sectional studies. Above that is case-controlled studies. Above that are cohort studies. Above that are controlled studies. Now we're really getting into our world. I'll tell you, I'm generally looking for controlled studies and above. Cohorts, yes, they can be great. But generally, I'm looking for RCTs, randomized control trials in humans, by the way. A rat is different than a human. I don't know if you know this. There are things that they test in rats, in usually in large quantities, that people extrapolate results from, right? That we have not seen in randomized controlled trials of humans. Okay. So that second to top tier is controlled studies. And then that top, and Danielle, you already mentioned this, is two things. It's meta-analyses, which is another way of saying studies of studies, and systematic reviews. Okay. And a lot of times for me, the gold standard is a meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials. And you can find these. You could just Google it to find one right now and just say, give me a meta-analysis of randomized controlled trials. You'll see what the meta-analysis did was study 17 controlled trials, right? And what they did is they, for the most part, were removed bias from, you know, that results or those conclusions. Why? Because they're just studying the studies. They're not the ones actually investigating the research questions. They are studying the conclusions as a whole. Now, that was not a terrific, expose on again, scientific evidence. Maybe there will be some need for us to talk about these individually as we bring up different case studies, or maybe to do another episode that looks at what do all these mean. We don't have time for that today. But I hope that was clarifying in a sense that this is what's going on in the background of someone that's an evidence-based practitioner. It's not, hey, keto is good because it caused me to lose a bunch of weight, so therefore it works, or it worked for my friend down the street, or even my doctor said I need to do keto. Now, I'm not getting in between you and your doctor, but you hear how these experts, or I've got this guy that has a master's in nutrition and he thinks keto is better for reducing cardiovascular risk in people with type 2 diabetes or type 1 diabetes. You know, you're going to hear some of this stuff and just say very calmly, I would just love to see where that evidence comes from. I would love to see. And then know within that there is a bit of a rank order in terms of, you know, the study. If they point you to a CNN article, run, right? So it's just right there and CNN. Okay. Well, that's an editorial. And maybe that article links to a study. Maybe you probably need to get 3 or 4 clicks deep into it to find the actual study and to read it and then to actually compare what that editorial is saying about the results and what the study was actually testing and actually found. Okay. So all that's to say, bit of a rant on that side, but I hope that helps people. I don't want this to feel any more confusing because there's already confusion out there. So what we're saying is that there is a difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist. A dietitian must go to school. They must, again, go through the steps that you articulated earlier. They must take an exam. They must be approved and passed to become a registered dietitian nutritionist. A nutritionist is anyone that's super pumped on food, okay? And they can just call themselves a nutritionist. And they can have a huge following. And they can say a lot of really dumb things. They can say some smart things too, by the way. I'm not saying they're all saying wrong things. And let's be honest, there's a lot of dietitians out there that say some dumb things too. So the further you drift away from the evidence, the more zany it's going to get. So what we do as both an RDN and as someone that's certified in nutrition science on the evidence-based side, we are going to keep our recommendations very near and dear to the best research available. And that's part of the back end of what's gone on. And so why we're making personal recommendations to people is because we've seen this bear out in the literature. We've understood your individual context and preferences, and we are marrying the two, the best scientific evidence with your personal experience. Maybe that's the best way I could say it. That's really what we try to do on the evidence-based side of things. And so with that, is that a bit of an exclamation point that we end this episode on, or what are your thoughts, Daniel?
Looks good. Yeah. I'm glad we had this conversation.
Cool. And like I said, you know, so for those of you that have been following us along for a little bit, thank you. We intend to kind of have some more free form conversations moving forward. We'll both try to kind of keep each other on track as we go through some of these topics, but we have a few other topics that we've tossed out like, hey, let's go talk about this and not have any notes really. Because we're in this stuff all day. It doesn't mean we're going to be lazy with our articulation of our ideas. It just means that we're going to have a little bit more free-form conversations. Hopefully it's entertaining for you all, a little bit of a difference from how we've attacked questions in the past. But I do think this is an important one that not enough people are asking, and they're not asking of the people that are giving them advice. And so that's kind of a key, and you and I run into that quite a bit, right? We hear someone says, well, I have to do this because, you know, this fruit has too much sugar in it. So who told you that? Like specifically, give me a name. Let's call them right now and just ask where they got that information. And no one takes me up on it, right? Because it's kind of confrontational. But that's a bit of what we have to do as consumers of information, and certainly as people that are taking that information and adjusting what we put into our body based off of it. Okay. So that's really the crux. That's really the heart behind this whole topic, which is, we've got to help people discern this stuff better. And I always tell people, like, if you saw in that consultation that I did, and I remember the client too, over 2 years ago, I told him, I was like, don't take my word for it. I'll put the links in your initial consultation document. Click through to the research. Raise a flag if you have a question. Raise your hand. Say, Mark, prove it. Mark, I don't believe you. What gives you the right to say, like, where did you get this? I welcome those questions. The people that don't welcome those questions are the people that have the most to be afraid of, right? Because they're being found out for dogma as opposed to basing their recommendations in research. Okay. So with that, I'm going to casually step off my soapbox and wrap this up. So Danielle, you brought this to me, and we go back and forth with kind of how we bring some of these topics. And so thanks for bringing this to us. Thanks for bringing clarity on the difference between dietitian and nutritionist. Again, for the people listening, I hope this helps build a little bit more discernment, a little bit more awareness that there are people out there selling you things and can call themselves things, right? And it's really just about getting to convince you or ultimately pay them for something. It doesn't mean that it is articulated in the most up-to-date research. It's not conclusive. It's not results-driven. It's not data-driven. There's a lot of people out there trying to get your attention, trying to get your dollars. So if this episode at all helped you create a little bit more discernment, give you a couple questions to ask yourself or someone articulating some of these ideas, which again, remember, ideas, lowest form of scientific evidence. Okay. I hope that this episode at least scratched the surface of that for you. So if it has been helpful, would love for you all to subscribe, drop us a review, let us know how we're doing, and feel free to share with a friend that you enjoy these sort of conversations with, or you have friends that are curious about this sort of thing. We put on this podcast solely with the intent of helping as many people as possible for free. And so your shares allow us to do that. Your reviews allow more people to find us, et cetera, et cetera. And so speaking of finding us, if you're on social media, you can follow us at Imago Nutrition. That is I-M-A-G-O Nutrition. And do not hesitate on our social media to drop a comment and say, where's the research behind this statement? So if we say something on social media, please challenge us, but also get ready for an inundation of PMIDs because I have them all on my phone and I'm ready to copy and paste them into the chat. So we'll have fun with it. And as always, we'd like to thank the band Happy Pill for our theme song, Think About Food. We'll see you next time.